I declare the meeting open at 5:30 p.m. I welcome councillors, management, members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. I take this opportunity to notify members of the public the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will also be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as practicable. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council business team after the meeting. May I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises 6 reports from management. No apologies have been received. I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on the council to move a resolution on document minutes of open meeting number 53 held on Tuesday the 3rd of March 2015. Councillor Foster, Deputy Lord Mayor, I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That is unanimous. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meeting? In that case, as at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the conduct of meetings local law 2010. In relation to agenda item 6.2, ministerial referral 54 to 56 and 58 to 64 at Beckett Street, Melbourne, a request to speak from Tom Orton from Ellenberg Fraser and an item of correspondence from Matthew Matiski from Sinclair Book. Is there anybody here who would like to address the committee whose name I've not read out? I advise our submitter that you have 3 minutes to address the committee. We adhere to the 3-minute time limit. There is a counter on the wall behind me, beep sound at the completion of 2 minutes, and they signal you have 1 minute remaining. A final beep signals the time allocated is finished. In accordance with the Council Resolution of 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the beginning and the end of this meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration, and it is not the time to make submissions or to address agenda items of tonight. Are there any people who wish to ask us questions? In that case, could I call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of Chair in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. I'd like to start by first thanking my deputy, Councillor Main, for handling last portfolio meeting really well. Looking at the minutes, yes. I was always sick from flu, not avoiding any topics, though. There are 3 reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio tonight. The first item is agenda item 6.1, ministerial referral TPM 2014-40, which is 441 to 451 Elizabeth Street and 139 to 141 Franklin Street, Melbourne. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. In that case, I'm happy to move. I'll move the recommendation up there on the screen. I call a councillor to second the motion. Councillor Main, good. Just a quick few words. I thank officers for the detailed report and it's all the issues that were raised and commented on. I just want to say that with this particular application in that particular area, which has a 30-meter discretionary height limit, the key issues here is that the proposal is probably too tall for its in respect to its neighbouring properties on both Elizabeth Street and Franklin Street. It also has issues on setbacks from the neighbours, especially when they are developable sites, which means that the way it's designed, that the neighbouring properties will be very, very restricted if they choose to do some development in the future. And of course, the key issue here is that there are heritage buildings surrounding on the 2 sites, which means that there needs to be some treatment of those carefully, including sufficient setbacks, which currently in this proposal it doesn't have. So rather than go through too much detail, I'm just happy to say that I support what the officers have recommended, which is to object to this particular application and respond back to the Minister's Department of Environment, Land, Water and Planning. The seconder.
Thanks, Councillor Ong. Look, this is an interesting history one of the rare refusals by the former minister, and a very strongly worded letter from our former CEO on the public record in this report, setting out in no uncertain terms everything which was wrong with the previous 49 level proposal, and the minister heeded the advice of the council and refused it. And so it's a little bit surprising, I think, that the owner, Goodyear Properties, and the architect, Peddlethorpe, have come back with a similarly sized proposal, albeit with some amendments which are less objectionable, particularly in relation to the treatment with the heritage buildings, but still, as the report summarises on the front page, a gross overdevelopment of the site. So I think in summary it would be a bad day if this Goodyear proposal was approved, and we should very much hope that the new planning minister, Dick Wynne, follows the council's advice on this. And I think one other interesting point that probably ought to be made is that there are a number of references in the report to the association, the proximity to the Queen Victoria Market, and there is a review of the planning arrangements around the market currently underway, which will become more public down the track. And so it might be more appropriate if a proposal on a site like this was considered after all of that was ventilated. And certainly under the current planning arrangements, it's utterly inappropriate, and certainly hope that it is refused very promptly by the minister.
Thank you, Councillor Mann. Any other any speakers against the motion? Further speakers to support the motion? No, I'll just quickly close off. Thanks for the comments. Looking at this particular property... Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay.
Just looking at this, I just want to make a comment. In many of these large applications in the city, many companies, the owners and developers would usually get a planning consultant and an appropriate architect. Now, I'm not saying anything about this, but they didn't use a planning consultant, and I noticed that sometimes different architects coming into the city to do bigger projects, they need to understand a little bit more about how the city treats developments, the neighbouring properties, the respect that they need to show for where they are in. I think that's important. This particular development proposal needs a bit more work before it will get anywhere close to what we would think is reasonable. On that note, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Second item, agenda item 6.2, which is TPM 2010-29B. Number 54 to 56 and number 58 to 64, Beckett Street, Melbourne. Councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? No. In that queue, on that note, I'll call Tom Orton from Ellenberg Fraser, who has requested to address the committee. Tom, you have 3 minutes. After two, the beep will sound and you can wind up.
Thank you very much. How do we go forward here? Thank you. Great. Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak this evening. Just like to use this opportunity to speak in support of our application at 54 to 64 Beckett Street. We'll get straight to it. So this is a permit amendment. There's an existing approval for a 50-level building on the site. And I'd just like to talk quickly about the typical floor plan and some of the key moves we made in addressing that typical floor plan, and more specifically, the interface with the Maiady apartment building directly to the west of us. You'll see that in the permitted proposal, there's quite a few bedrooms that sit directly adjacent to the Maiady development. We've looked to reorient the core in the building and move as much apartment product as possible and amenity away from that edge, away from that interface with Maiady, so that we can significantly reduce the overlooking. We've looked to amend the overall layouts of floor plans to improve the amount of daylight to living rooms and bedrooms, and overall have reduced the site coverage from the permitted 780 square metres to 755 square metres. When we compare the two buildings in section, you'll see that we have added 14.5 metres of additional height to the building, or the equivalent of five levels. But that's not about putting more apartments into the building. In fact, there's a reduction in dwellings from 502 to 463 dwellings. What that height has really come from is looking at the Melbourne Planning Scheme and adopting things like the double height through link that come to, that's lifted the height of the building slightly, you know, bringing in some through block porosity and connecting with another through link proposed at 97 Franklin Street to the north of us. We've included 253 storage cages. The permit had none. We've got a double height gym and pool, an outdoor entertainment area on level 9 and 10. We've got a dining and lounge area up on the 55. So you see that we've increased the amenity, the community amenity, from 35 square metres to 1,717 square metres overall. And you can see that here in the plans quickly. The through link on the ground floor in the middle of the level 9 and 10 plan with a gym and pool and lounge areas, barbecue areas, and on top a lounge and some dining rooms as well as a games room. And this is what the building looks like. The permit on the left as lodged in the middle, and the proposed on the right there. So you see we've introduced a setback above the permitted height to the street, so a 5.4 metre setback you can see there. Now that's come about through discussions with MCC and with the department. So above the permitted height, we're introducing a street setback, which you can see in these images right here. I'll go back one. You see that the building to the left of us now reads on the corner much taller than us. That setback really, I think, addresses that urban sort of question that we're one down the street, they're the corner building, they're the taller building. You can see it there as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the presenter? No? Councillor Main.
Tom, the report does make mention of the fact that the officers would have liked to see some more street activation at street level. Can you take us through why you weren't able to accommodate more street activation?
I'll come back to the ground floor. So the ground floor is the floor plan you can see on the left here. We're trying to achieve as much as possible, really. I think we've done... Sorry, I'm looking for my pointer. There it is. So we've got a cafe here that works with that through block link that runs all the way to the east. All the bikes are going to be incorporated. The visitor bikes are going to be incorporated in that link as well. And then the lobby opens all the way up to the street, so that the active portion of the building, I really feel, is this whole laneway and then all the way along. And there's only this small area just here, which is the car access and some of the key building services that must face the street, like the Brewster cupboards for the fibre grade. I feel like we've done as much as we really physically can to activate that element,
right,
and really compress the building services and the other elements.
Yes, Councillor Wood has a question for you.
Thanks, Chair. Tom, can you just reiterate the setback at street level with A Beckett Street?
Let's go to a typical floor plan. Come back. So up to level 50, as is permitted, we do not have a setback for this element of the building. And for this element of the building here, there's a 5.4 metre setback from a Beckett Street. And then above the permitted height of the building, we've introduced a 5.4 metre setback to the street, to the top five levels of the building, essentially.
Okay.
Just one more. What was it about? I'm just interested that you had a permit and you've come back. What was it about the economics or the design of the permit, the permitted project you had, that was not doable?
We didn't feel like, as the new architect to the job, to the proposal, with the new client who'd bought the site with the permit, we felt like there could be improvements to the internal amenity of the apartments, getting more daylight into the living rooms and the bedrooms. We also felt like if we're looking to offer apartments to people buying apartments in Melbourne, we need to offer community amenity like a pool and a gym and a lounge and a dining, and those sorts of elements are very key to city living. That's the two main points.
Okay. Thank you, Tom. If no other questions, you may take your seat. Right, where am I? I'd like to move a slightly amended recommendation. Do you have that one? which is the original adding in the parts that are highlighted in blue. I'll move that recommendation and look for Councillor to second that recommendation. Councillor Mayne. Just a quick one. I mean, this is an amendment to an existing permit, and reading the officer's report and the specific layouts, there are positives, bearing in mind that with the original permit, as paragraph 2 indicated, we had previously raised concerns about this, irrespective of those points, but the proposal that's come in has improved some of the interface issues, as well as the inclusion of more community facilities from the residents' perspective. I think that's a good part, good aspect of it. I won't go into all the specific details, everyone's read them, but adding in that condition 1E, the reason for that is in the waste management section of the report, it stated that the waste management plan needed to include the ability to handle 10-meter compacted trucks, because a normal waste management handling is about 8.8 meters, and therefore the sweep of that and the height clearance are slightly different. So I thought I should include that in, because it didn't make a mention when the final conditions, other than say that we need to have a waste management plan. It's good to see that they're proposing a compactor. The City of Melbourne's been working pretty hard to get more developers to use new technologies to improve waste management, recycling, reuse, and if organic waste handlers are included, that'll be even better. So that's something for the developer to consider. I'll leave my comments in that, and Councillor Mayne.
Thanks, Chair. Look, again, an interesting history here, a permit with lots of borrowed light and poor setbacks and shadowing and amenity, a whole bunch of issues. How I got a permit in the first place, I think it's another one that the former minister should perhaps try and explain one day. And then an interesting attempt just before the election for a new application to go to 81 levels from 50, a few days before caretaker. And that was rejected. That was a bridge too far. And so now we've got something where, I guess from a council point of view, we started off with what we felt was a very poorly designed permit, and we're sort of happy to improve it, but obviously not happy overall. Our aspirations for things like 24-metre tower separations, not even anywhere near close when you've got streets like a Becker Street, where you've had other poor approvals in the past, like 410 Elizabeth Street, setting a bad precedent, and then you're not going to get the separations that you need. Once you've got one, then people say, well, they've had an approval, why can't we? And it snowballs and you finish up with a canyon. So there's going to be a couple of very closely aligned, very tall towers in Beckett Street, which will be very dominant in the area. But overall, the amenity is better. The apartments are bigger. The storage is an improvement. Some of the setbacks have been approved, although not enough on Beckett Street. But overall, the officers are reluctantly saying this is a better outcome, and given the negotiating position we're in, we reluctantly approve it. And it will be interesting to see which way the minister goes. But I think we all need to remember that we certainly wouldn't want to see what's currently permitted built. And so it'd be nice to put that one into the dustbin by moving on to the current proposal, which is before us tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Councillor Leppard. Speaking to the motion.
Thank you, Chair. I'll speak to the motion. I concur with Councillor Lane's comments. This application takes a pretty terrible permit and makes it slightly less terrible. I'm going to support the application because it is an improvement on what has been permitted, particularly in regards to the treatment of apartments, and these apartments are going to be much more livable, much more habitable than they have been, than they would have been if the permit is acted upon. So I do hope the Minister approves this amendment, and I'll be supporting it on that basis. But, of course, the tower, at the end of the day, is still going to have no setbacks to Beckett Street except above what is at the 51st level, and thank goodness our officers and the departmental officers have worked to negotiate a setback above the 51st level. I mean, that's not quite the human scale, but I suppose the setback's better than nothing. And the tower separation, as Councillor Mayne says, is woefully inadequate. However, it is an improvement, and so reluctantly and with a lot of frustration, I'll be supporting the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Any other speakers? Councillor Leppard. Thank you, Councillor Leppard. There's a word yet, yes. Any other councillors like to speak for the motion? Against the motion? All right, I'll close the debate by... just a note. We're seeing a development proposal coming in for 48 to 50 at Beckett Street, which if you all read the report, right next to it there's a little narrow strip and then a bigger block at the end. Try to imagine what can go in there. I think there are some ambitious people out there. On that note, I'll put it out to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. Right. Next item on the planning agenda is item 6.3, the review of adequacy for sunlight, of the sunlight to public spaces local policy. Councillors, like a presentation on this agenda item? No. No? In that case, Councillor Leppard, move it. I'll second it. Councillor Leppard.
Thank you, Chair. This report is a result of a resolution that Council made in February after a motion was moved by Councillor Oak, and I want to thank all of the officers for doing the work in the last 2 months to put this report together. I think it is it demonstrates well why we do need to embark on a full and comprehensive review of this sunlight to public places local policy. That was certainly the hypothesis when the motion was moved in February, and that hypothesis has been fully supported by the words and the findings of the officers in this report. So thank you to the officers for doing a thorough job. It is clear, based on the language in this report, that the current local policy is inadequate, and that word pops up time and time again. And I know that there will be differences of opinion about where we should land with a review of this nature. Might cause some concern out there. However, we do need to start somewhere. If the officers of the council and the council is going to determine that the current policy is inadequate, well, then you do need to review it. So without knowing necessarily where we're going to land yet, I think we can all support the idea that if it is inadequate as we found it to be, then we do need to review it. So I look forward to the work that will be undertaken over the course of not only the next year. I'm sure if there's going to be planning scheme amendments after that, the process will be even longer. Hopefully it will be no longer than it needs to be, and I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. As a seconder, I support what's been said. And I think it's consistent with what we've been doing in this council and the previous terms council, that we started to look at the Melbourne Planning Scheme. I mean, the review back in 2008 and recently last year, but we've also looked at the MSS and a whole lot of other things that we've been undertaking. Structure planning reviews, heritage reviews. And this policy is consistent with the direction we're taking, that many of the policies that we put in place date back 10, 15 or more years ago. The city's changed significantly in the last 10 years. And in some ways, you could say we're playing catch-up. I mean, this coming financial year, we'll be starting to embark on West Melbourne Structure Plan Review, West Melbourne Heritage Review, and having another close look at the Central City built form reviews, because the reality is this: many of us are aware that some parts of the city are not as well protected as other parts, and it's timely that we have a good look and look at what we protect and what we allow in the various aspects and various parts of the city. Because if we don't, then planning and applications are coming from all directions into all kinds of spaces. People coming with proposals using new technologies on construction methods, trying to build 70 stories in 150 square meter blocks. Those are the kinds of challenges that we've seen over the last few years, and I think a lot of this work is necessary. And of course, with new technologies building new tall buildings limited by the OLS, there'll be new overshadowing that we haven't thought of in the past. And I think this is something that we need to look at. I'm happy that Councillor Leppard has brought this to our attention, and I'm happy to support this and look forward to the outcome. Our Councillor Oak brought it up, and he moved it, and I'm happy. It doesn't matter. Whoever moved, this is something needs to be done. Okay. I'll leave it at that. Any other speakers to this motion? Lord Mayor.
I will support this motion for a review, but with some nervousness and with some caveats. The watchword of planning is certainty, operating by the accepted and known rules. And in here, we like from time to time to rail, as we have done tonight, against ministers for ad hoc decisions or for changing the rules midstream. And yet that's what we're proposing to look at here through this review. So just let's put that bit into context. And I'd also point out that, you know, there is no orthodoxy here. This cuts both ways. It says the local policy is inadequate. And I would agree. When I look at the local policy saying places like Federation Square or Queensbridge Square should not be overshadowed, I think to myself, one of the things those two spaces need is a bit of shade. Not to be in the open glare of sunshine the whole time. So just remember, it cuts both ways. And the other part is, I don't like the underlying mantra that there is good and there is bad shade. Bad shade is buildings. Apparently good shade is trees, because we also have a policy to increase the canopy by 40% in many of our protected public spaces. So how would we react if in fact we now say there's a policy about sunlight to public spaces, which our urban forest strategy contradicts? Do we actually make a differentiation between what sort of shade is thrown between trees equals good hug, buildings equals bad cross? That I don't think would be sustainable. And I think that's one of the problems of entering into a review like this with open arms, that the law of unintended consequences, I worry, will apply to this. I will support a review, but I will oppose its results if it is not the result of deep analysis, not quick wins for political correctness around development being evil, not orthodoxy without contestable rigour about what shade and sunlight might mean in public spaces. And unless this review does that, it will sell us short. And therefore, I will support the review, but will reserve my right, when I look at the review's conclusions, to work out whether we've opened up a can of worms which actually takes us backwards, or in the sort of interest of trying to do the right thing by getting protection for the spaces that should be protected, whether we've actually gone too far. Tonight I'll at least support the review, but it better be a good one and a rigorous one.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Any other speakers to this item? Councillor Main.
Thanks, Chair. Look, I think one thing you can say about planning is it's always changing. I mean, that's the one thing I've discovered, is that you're always reviewing stuff, 10 reviews at a time. Planning scheme amendments, heritage reviews, different control reviews, precinct reviews. So I think, you know, the Lord Mayor's right that the principle of, you know, investing and sovereign risk and certainty is that you shouldn't change the rules. But you have to change the rules in planning. You have to do it in a fair and considered empirical way. And I think what has most characterised the last 3 or 4 years is that the rules have largely been ignored in the last 3 or 4 years. And we have now, with a change of government and a change of minister, we have seen a change in the environment, because the rules are now more likely and are being applied. Now, this is what the Lord Mayor's talking about, is a potential change to the rules, and I agree that is a separate question. What are the rules, and then are the rules being applied consistently? And I also will be nervous about doing anything which changes the rules. But I think we've also had, you know, close to 100 towers approved in the previous 4-year term, so the horse has bolted. You know, there's a 10-year pipeline of approvals out there, the quality of which we've seen some tonight. And so we're going to be grappling with that for the next few years. And this won't be able to change any of them. So I think that's also a context that needs to be considered as we go into this review. But just because it's contentious doesn't mean you shouldn't look at it. But I agree. I'm a little bit nervous about where this will finish, and I know some of the positions that will be taken will be highly restrictive on future development, and I think we will need to have a balanced outcome that considers the full context. And look forward to seeing the empirical work of the officers and having a good solid debate once that comes back.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Would any other councillors like to speak against the motion? For the motion? Okay. Ms. Mover, would you like to conclude?
Thank you, Chair. Just briefly. Let's remember that the reason we called the review was to test whether or not the objectives in the local policy were being met, not to have a full range review of the policy in its entirety necessarily. So the objectives include aspirations such as to ensure new buildings and works allow good sun penetration to public spaces, and to protect and, where possible, increase the level of sunlight to public spaces during the times of the year when the intensity of use is at its highest. These are all objectives that have been endorsed for a very, very long period of time. What the preliminary review has found is that the mechanisms in place in the detail of that policy are no longer adequately allowing decisions to be made which meet the objectives of the policy. So I don't think there's going to be huge major surprises in here. I think the council is going to be consistent that we'd like the objectives of the policy to remain upheld, to remain the same. I don't think they're going to change a lot as well, but we do need to look at the mechanisms in place to make sure that it does that. This is quite a dynamic council. We can change built form controls and lift built form controls all over the city, whilst at the same time we can pass heritage planning scheme amendments which put downward pressure on development in some areas. We do either of these things only based on really sound, comprehensive policy research, analysis and presentation, and I'm sure this will be exactly the same, and I look forward to that review. I do agree with the Lord Mayor that any planning scheme amendment would need to be thoroughly justified and based on a large and comprehensive body of work, but let's remember that what we're trying to do is uphold the objectives that are already found in the planning scheme, not to throw them out the window and start from scratch again. So I think we're probably closer than some might think, and I look forward to seeing where this review will take us.
Thank you, Councillor Lepet. On that note, I'll put the recommendation, the motion, to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. I declare it carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Forster to assume the role of Chair of the meeting in relation to the People's City portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Wong. There is one report from management for consideration under the People's City portfolio, Agenda Item 6.5, Family and Children's Advisory Committee Terms of Reference and Membership. Would councillors like a presentation on this agenda item? Okay. In that case, if I could just see a motion on the screen, I'll be inclined to move it, no doubt. Yeah, I'll move the motion on the screen. Is there a seconder? Thank you, Councillor Wong. Just briefly, when Melbourne for All People was passed by Council in...
Sorry, Chair, can I just interrupt on a point of procedure?
Yes.
I understood informally that there may be an alternative recommendation from management. Is that the case?
I'm sorry, I thought that's what I was reading.
I think that's it there, yeah.
I'll move that one instead. Councillor Wong, would you like to second that one? Okay. Councillors want a minute to just read that. Okay. When Melbourne for All People was passed in August last year by Council, it basically consolidated the children's plan with three other strategies. And, Councillor Wong seconded that. So these revised terms of reference now appropriately focus on Melbourne for All People as the overarching strategic policy document. It also improves the process for selection of committee members with a targeted EOI process. So it also and will also give us some flexibility to extend the terms of committee members if that turns out to be required. So a special thanks to Jane Foley and her team for some more excellent work. Councillor Wong? Any other councillor like to speak for or against the motion? In that case, I'll put the motion. All those in favour? That's carried unanimously. I now call on Councillor Mayne to assume the role of Chair in relation to the Finance and Governance portfolio.
Thanks, Councillor Forster. Agenda item 6.6 is the early public release of the draft 2015-16 annual plan actions. I presume we don't one day presentation on that. I'm happy to move a motion which is slightly amended from the notice paper, which appears on the screen, which just gives a more precise release time of 2 p.m. tomorrow. Is there a seconder for that? Councillor Wood, thank you. Okay, so councillors, as we know, we've decoupled the release of our budget, and which will be in May, and the actions, the annual actions, are 140 or thereabouts, that will underpin the budget. And one of the reasons for that is that we were well advanced in the preparation of the annual actions and felt that there might be an opportunity for greater public discussion and submissions and debate if we released the actions earlier, and that they won't get swamped by the budget, which has been the historical experience when we've released the big wad of documents all on the same day in the same media lockup. So tomorrow at 2 p.m, our 140 first cut or first draft of the actions will be out there. I'm looking forward to seeing how the public responds to it. There's a couple in there I'm quite excited about, like the proposal that we have three developer forums in the coming financial year so that we can control and influence the debate about development, quality of development, the planning rules in the city, rather than responding to property council requests to speak at their conferences. We're actually going to get on the front foot and host three forums in 15-16 where we set the agenda and we invite speakers in and we show that we're active in the debate. So that's an action that will be in there tomorrow. It's funded and I think it'll be a good outcome. Another one I'm looking forward to seeing is one that came from the People's Panel, which was there's only 138 to go, so the People Panel, which is the review of our real estate property holdings. So there's an action about that, and we're looking at that proactively, and it's in the plan, and we'll see how that goes. And the last one I'm going to mention is the end of year media report. And I think what's quite interesting about that is that we do a very, very good and polished media service, if you like. So if a journalist contacts the council, the amount, the speed and the information that comes back to the journalist is very thorough, very prompt, and I think if other governments could see how this works, I think it would set a very good example. So at the end of the year, we're actually going to do an end of year media report which will sort of provide a little bit of public examination or disclosure of how this all works, how the process works, the amount of inquiries we have, and maybe even give a few examples of the data or the information that
Councillor
we release.
Councillor Mayne, sorry, point of order, are you not actually declaring things that we've not yet decided to make public?
Yeah.
Potentially, yes.
Like, actually, you've just listed things that are... Sorry, just a point of order.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
fine.
We haven't actually decided to make it public yet.
No, I'm speaking... Yeah, that's right. But there's a motion to make it public tomorrow. So you can speak against it if you like, Councillor Oak, but I mean, there's another 137 that everyone can all talk about as well. So I thought there was some solid unanimity about the concept of releasing the actions early. I don't particularly want to cloak it all in secrecy. I think we should be quite open and transparent about what's going to be released at 2 o'clock tomorrow, and look forward to everyone publicly debating.
Thank you,
and
Chair.
I'll call the seconder to speak.
I think I'll come in there.
Councillors, could I just make the point? Councillor Mayne's exuberance aside, these are confidential until we move a motion to actually make them public. So it would be inappropriate to discuss specific issues that may be made public if this motion passes. But I think we can put aside the mover's enthusiasm for the process, but that is actually what we're debating. So I think we need to be mindful of that, and if we can stick to the Local Government Act, that would be useful.
With that comment from the Lord Mayor, I'm happy to leave the 136 other actions for another time. I look forward to the flood of public comment at 2 p.m. Tomorrow. But I do share Councillor Mayne's excitement, perhaps not his penchant for disclosure, but his excitement around the actions. And I think the officers should be thanked for the work that they've done in supporting us to get to the actions that we will release tomorrow. So thank you very much for that, and happy to support Councillor Mayne's recommendation here that he's brought to us. So thank you very much.
Councillor Wood, any other speakers? Councillor Oak.
Councillor Main, just to clarify, I wholeheartedly support this recommendation. I'm glad that you brought it forward, and I agree that when we first discussed 3 years ago now, the early disclosure and discussion of council plans with the community, I supported the motion in our four-year plan, and this is one of the ways that we can do that by release. If we've got the information available, let's make it available as soon as possible so that we can have greater discussion with our constituents and hopefully, as Councillor Wood says, receive a flood of submissions as a result, hopefully supporting all of the proposed actions and not noting out many that we've missed out. But I do support releasing this information as early as possible. I just was cautioning against breaches to the local government there. Thank you.
Councillor Leppert.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. That's right. You've been chastised enough. I'm not going to add to that. I want to thank you, Councillor Mayne, for proposing in the first instance that we do pull this forward. I think that we've all discovered that this process was less painless than some might have thought, and it probably sets a very good model for the future. We've now agreed on some draft actions, and we can agree to release them after that agreement has been made. That's before the budget's been finalised, but there's no harm in releasing that draft list of actions. So I'd like to not only see what comes out of this process, but if it all works really well, I think it sets a really good precedent for future years. It allows the community more time to consider what is the most important strategic document that a council produces, which is the annual plan and budget in any given year. And the more time, the better. Like you, Councillor Mayne, I look forward to a deluge of submissions from 2 p.m. tomorrow, and I thank you for bringing this to us. The last thing I want to say is a huge thank you to Rose and her team. There'll be thank yous for the team that put together the budget at a future date, but the process to date to allow for these actions to be drafted up has been enormous, and I want to thank you and your team. Thank you very much.
Any other speakers? All right. I'm happy to close debate. There's only 137 to go. No, I'll just make a brief comment to councillors that I did send an email about 2 hours ago suggesting that we take a certain course of action and did not receive one reply to the contrary. And having embraced a openness and transparency and sunlight approach to this, I think to suddenly have the veil of confidentiality thrown at you in a public meeting is interesting. Anyway, so I think it'll be a good, solid process. We're in uncharted territory in terms of how it goes down. I think there will be a lot more scrutiny on the actions, which will be healthy. Are we focused on too much micro stuff? Have we missed a few big things? All that will be open for debate, and I think that'll be a healthy thing, and look forward to seeing how that plays out through the budget process. So we'll put that to the vote. All those in favour? Any against? Declare that carried unanimously. Agenda item 6.7 is participation at upcoming local government forums. I presume we don't want a presentation on this one. There is some amendments to this, councillor, so we'll just ask for the amended. No, this is. I'm chairing, councillor Wong. There's some amendments that are appearing on the screen now, which have been sent around by email, but they're also appearing on the screen. Yeah, it's all there. So, all right, so we might want to actually scroll through all the way to the bottom so we can... you all got that covered? Yep. And the junketeers are Councillor Wong and myself.
Speaking about that again.
Yep. All right, so we've got to... I'll have it move that, and Councillor Leppert will second that. Outrageous cost, yes. Okay, so look, just briefly, we've got two important fora coming up, the MAV State Council and the Australian Local Government Association National General Assembly, and we're putting up five motions to those two events. I won't necessarily go through all of them, but the ALGA one is a omnibus governance and transparency motion. which effectively is most of the things that we've done, some of which we've been doing for many, many years, such as quarterly disclosure of expenses and pre-approval of interstate and international travel are on our shopping list, but there's also a few other ones like the public questions and the disclosure of lease registers and disclosure of senior executive salaries, and just those general good practice disclosure principles, which sometimes run into resistance with other councils. I've been surprised by the level of resistance at the MAV, and we'll be interested to see whether we can get a majority of councils nationally to sign up to 7 different transparency proposals, some of which they will object to because they don't want the scrutiny. So it's not going to be easy to get the numbers. I'll need the full force of my Labor, Green and Liberal colleagues to arm twist their way around the delegates to try and get majority support. But it will be an interesting process, and I think it's good that Melbourne is trying to spread the transparency disclosure message across the sector. At the MAV level, there's one endorsing the Auditor General recommendations, which was a bit of a wake-up call for the MAV, which I understand there'll be some other motions coming up from other councils with a similar line. And we've also got, I think, a proposal about gender appointments to boards, where the MAV has never had a female president in more than 100 years, elected through the regular processes, have still only got 1 out of 9 female directors of their insurance subsidiary. So it's basically saying that we endorse the Andrews government proposal on a 50-50 split, or minimum of 50% with boards and judicial appointments, and we try and get the MAV to endorse that and put that message through the sector, which again will prove difficult to get support with, particularly given the predominance of non-metropolitan councils and many, many elderly male delegates, to put it quite frankly. So we always like to challenge ourselves. We're not afraid to lose at these forums. We like to challenge them, and we've picked up four or five quite challenging motions here, and it will be interesting and hard work to see if we can prevail on a majority of them over the coming couple of months. Councillor Levitt.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne, and can I thank you for a lot of the work that you've done as the MAV delegate and the presumptive ALGA delegate to do a lot of work in pulling these together. I think we've got some solid motions here. I agree that it will be a challenge to get a majority of these agreed by both MAV and ALGA, but as you say, we're not afraid to lose. The last state council I went to, a similar City of Melbourne proposal calling for better gender equality among local government, and a campaign to be run to improve conditions to encourage more women to run, was defeated by a handful of votes, and then after a division was called, it was still defeated by, I think, 1 or 2 votes. So the motion tightened after some of the men in the room had to actually disclose which way they voted. However, we still lost. Hopefully the motion that's in here about increasing participation by women in local government will succeed this time, and if it doesn't, I'm sure we'll keep putting it up. It is such a very important issue. I just want to say one quick word about the motion to MAV on Vago. I think it is a very significant thing when the Capital City Council is effectively saying to the MAV that your first analysis of the situation in responding to the Victorian Auditor General's report into the effectiveness of local government was to just argue jurisdictional issues but not actually address the substance of the report was the wrong way to go. Now, we've heard recently some good sounds from the MAV that hopefully that position will be shifting, but when the Capital City local government is putting on record and moving a motion at the state government to say, no, put the jurisdictional issues to one side and please address and implement a majority of the findings of the Victorian Auditor General's report, hopefully people will sit up and listen, and hopefully we can use that clout in the local government sector in Victoria to get some change here, because I do really think, and I'm sure this is shared by some of my colleagues, that the MAV's original response to the Vago report was inadequate. So I particularly hope that that motion can be carried at the MAV State Council.
Thanks, Councillor Leppert. Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. I'm very excited by the enthusiasm of both Councillor Mayne and Councillor Wrong in taking these fine motions in the City of Melbourne's name. I would just like to confirm, though, Councillor Mayne, that you're seeking to attend this year's ALGA Assembly, in which case I'd suggest that 1.3 be changed to June 2015.
Well spotted.
That was actually, credit goes to Linda Weatherson for that one.
I want to very briefly echo Councillor Leppert's excellent summary of the MAV motion about the Auditor General's office. I'm delighted that a number of councils, I understand, have framed similar motions, and I'm delighted that we will be joining them. I echo Councillor Leppert's concerns about jurisdiction arguments rather than arguments of substance about the findings of VAGO. And I would just say, not just, one would hope that this motion passes, you know, almost unanimously. How could you not respond to these claims? So let's presume it does that. That's the first hurdle. The second hurdle for me is whether the new MAV board actually just make the right noises about responding to it, or actually do things that we can measure, that we can evaluate, that change the practices that VAGO found to be, frankly, appalling practice. And I think, again, that should be, it certainly is for me, an indicator of whether we should initiate a debate again about whether we wish to be associated with the MAV, should they not approach this in a way which seeks genuine reform to the concerns that the Auditor General raised. But I certainly applaud Councillor Wrong and yourself for going. I echo Councillor Leppard's sentiments 100%.
Any other speakers? Councillor Wood?
Just very briefly, thanks, Chair, just to echo Lord Mayor's comments, and in genuine thanks on behalf of all councillors to Councillor Ong and Councillor Mayne for actually going along to this and representing us. It's important that we're represented there. I think there are a good range of motions, but let's not forget that to give up your time to go up there and to represent this City Council is something that we should all thank you for.
Any other speakers? Okay, in conclusion, I think I think Councillor Leppert might be coming along as well to the MAV State Council as the alternative delegate. But certainly, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how we go. And my understanding, Lord Mayor, is that the new board has a very different position than the old board, and we will soon see evidence of that publicly. But I completely agree with your sentiment about the lack of appropriateness of the original defiant response. Okay, councillors, let's have a last vote of the night. All in favour? Any against? Declare that carried unanimously and hand back to the Lord Mayor.
Thank you. This concludes the reports from management to be considered in open session. There are no items of general business. Are there any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we move to a 15-minute period now for members of the public to ask us questions, or staff to ask us questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. Would any member of the public or any member of the staff care to ask us a question? In that case, could I thank members of the public, management and staff for their interest and attendance, and declare the meeting closed at 6:23 p.m.